awful question, sounding like a nasty cackle, as the wondrous universes of Nebraska and Oklahoma and Arkansas and Houston spun away from his touch. They were gone now, on to other specimens, and no amount of hoping and praying and wishing would ever get them back. Everywhere I went, everybody was asking me, "Are you going to play college football?" Every time someone said football, I couldn't take it. He came from a religious home, and he believed in the lessons of the Lord. Everything was gone so good, and he took it away from me just like that, said Booby. There must have been a reason for it, an explanation. But what was it? What on earth was it? And who was he anymore besides a teenage kid who 3 months before had been beatified with a halo of invincibility and now was being laughed at and scorned because it was somehow his fault that his football skills were as fragile as the flesh of his knee? It's hard for me to feel sorry for someone who already shit in his bed, said Trapper, convinced that Booby had been nothing but a quitter, even before the surgery. The sad part is, there are thousands of boobies all over this world, said Gaines. A lot of them don't have a chance. Welfare cases. He had several. He had a chance to fight back, and he threw up his skirt. On the practice field, a trio of men gathered one afternoon to joke about his plight. One of them suggested that maybe it was best for Booby just to kill himself since he didn't have football anymore. No, one of them objected. When a horse pulls up lame, you don't waste a bullet on him. There was unrestrained laughter, and the three enjoyed the analogy of comparing Booby to an animal. It was repeated. You don't waste a bullet on a horse. Only Nate Hearn had a different perspective on it all. His struggle to keep Booby on the team when he had tried to walk out the door during halftime against the Rebels wasn't some act. He understood the psychological pain Booby was going through, how unimaginably hard it was to sit there and watch someone else perform with brilliance a role that had once been his. He understood Booby for what he was, a kid who had been through so much in his life that just to be standing in one piece was a terrific accomplishment. But he also understood the world of high school football. When Booby got hurt, he became obsolete. He needed special attention, but he wasn't going to get it because he wasn't healthy, Hearn said. He was expendable because we had a heck of a running back. It was as simple as that. When Booby came home from the hospital, everyone was an enemy, an adversary, a contributor to the wreck of his senior year. Late that Saturday night, he and his uncle began to argue with one another in their home on the south side of town. They traded words, their shouts echoing through the tiny rooms. There was a flurry of accusations, both of them lost in the misery of what wasn't and the painful reality of what was. Booby, feverish, despondent, with a puffed-up knee that no longer contained the God-given gift of speed as sweet as the wind. L.V., heartsick at how all that work, all those attempts to mold his nephew into the next winner of the Heisman, all those hours spent teaching him the spins and the jukes and the angles for the corner, had ended up like this. At 10:30, Booby announced that he was going over to his aunt's house. L.V. told him he was crazy to get up and go somewhere after major knee surgery. "I'm through working with you," said L.V. "I'm through with you," said Booby. "Then get your stuff out." And Booby did just that, because nothing meant anything to him anymore, not even his uncle. L.V. waited for him to return. It had just been an argument, and surely he would come back once he calmed down, once he got hold of himself. But then hours went by, and then a day, and then another one, and then another one. and it became clear to LV that there wasn't much use waiting for the crooked front door to open on Booby, standing there with that infectious smile on his face, begging for forgiveness. He wasn't coming back. LV felt pain. He felt anger. He felt rejection. But, like everything else in his life, he ultimately accepted it as another disappointment that would somehow settle in. Just like the wall and crane that fenced him and the other blacks in like cattle. Just like not being able to play high school football because he wasn't allowed to go to the white school. Just like not being able to find a job. I miss him. But as time goes on, I'll learn to live with it, he said. It kind of wears away, but it's something you think about all the time. Booby was just like my own. Booby came by the house after about a week. LV was livid and told him he was never going to make it. But Booby was in no mood to listen. He packed up the rest of his stuff and just left. When LV looked into his room, it was bare. Booby had taken virtually everything with him. The poster of his idol, Michael Jordan, the one of Lawrence Taylor that had been given to him by the coaches as an inducement to play defense, even the recruiting letters that had once glowed so powerfully. But the dream still floated, still beckoned, as beautiful and elusive as the green light at the end of Gatsby's dock. He's got the physical ability to play pro football, said LV one afternoon, lingering by the practice field, even though Booby wasn't there. Everybody in the world knows that. But he's got to have the mental attitude. I hate to see it all go up in smoke. 3 or 4 more years, I would have had him ready. It's a bad situation, he said, his voice as soft and sorrowful as an autumn leaf slip-sliding to the ground. But I'll let it go. Postseason. Chapter 14. Friday Night Addiction. Part 1. Permian beat Amarillo Tascosa in the first round of the playoffs with ease, 31-7. Then the team flew to El Paso by chartered jet to face the Andrus Eagles. Everything seemed off that night. The temperature was freezing with a bitter wind and little flecks of snow, and the 10,000 or so fans in the stands of the gigantic Sun Bowl looked like little bits of paper swirling in a vacant street. Gaines, usually so silent and focused on the strategy of the game, prowled the sidelines with fury. He had gotten his reprieve and made it to the playoffs, but there was no room now for mistakes or sloppiness.
That's horse crap, and you know it!
Crap! Absolutely horse crap! Can't make a foot because you can't block anyone. Mannix! Quit tackling like a girl, Ivory! Hustle off the field! Get your heads out of your ass!
His anger extended to the locker room at halftime, when the score was only 21-7 in Permian's favor. He yelled at Winchell for throwing 2 interceptions. He yelled at Steve Womack and Billy Steen for not being able to tackle anyone. Then he started screaming at the top of his lungs, and it didn't seem like some calculated tantrum.
We're not going to win a state championship playing like that! We are not going to win a state championship playing that way!
Permian was easily victorious with a 41-13 score. But if the outburst was designed to steer the players toward greater discipline, it didn't work. Back in Odessa, the players celebrated with a party at one of their houses. Since they had traveled by charter jet, they got home way before their parents, most of whom made the 286-mile trip by car. And there were reports of one player wandering around dead drunk in the middle of the field house parking lot at 3 in the morning. The following Wednesday, with school out for the Thanksgiving break, The players found a mysterious note in their lockers when they came in for morning practice to prepare for the third-round playoff game against the Irving Nimitz Vikings. An open letter to the 1988 Permian Panther football team. Gentlemen, it has become quite evident in the last few weeks that the 1988 edition of the Permian Panthers is blessed with a great deal of physical talent. Impressive performances have indicated this, and many of your opponents will testify to your physical prowess. But we fear that your continued success is in much jeopardy. What we make reference to is the obvious lack of moral integrity and discipline among several members of your group. It has become painfully evident that the winning of a state championship is not a high priority of every member of this team. The primary goal of many of you appears to be seeing how intoxicated you can become, while others of you try to see how many rules you can flaunt and get by with. The tradition of mojo was built over a period of several years. Each succeeding team has contributed to this tradition. All of them have not contributed. For example, the 1986 team. But the vast majority of the teams have contributed in many different ways. At this point in time, all the 1988 team is doing is feeding off what was done in previous times. As a team, you have not made a single contribution to the tradition. In fact, at the present rate of decline, this Saturday will probably be the end of your season, and then you will join the 1986 team in history. That place is marked by a large sign with one word on it. Loser! Senior class, the choice is yours. No one can play the games for you. You must make a commitment to winning the remaining games or be prepared to have the stigma of being called a loser attached to your team for the rest of history. The letter was unsigned, but most of the players suspected it had been written by one of the coaches. "I know those cocksuckers wrote it," said Jared McDougal. The key tip-off being the use of a four-syllable word, intoxicants. That's a coach's word. He didn't find the letter amusing at all. Here it was the day before Thanksgiving, and there they were on a field that had turned from lush green to stunted yellow, practicing, just as they had done the day before and the day before that, going over the Nimitz defenses, 80 loose, C5, 80 solid, C5, invert weak, 68 storm, C3 man, and the Nimitz offenses. Right pro strong, right squirm, right tight F bump to unbalanced, until they were blue in the face, just as they had done for every other opponent, like they were robots or something, or mechanical arms on an assembly line. They had started practice in the middle of August, those wretched two-a-days, when every muscle ached and it wasn't unusual to lose 5 or 6 or 7 pounds from one practice to the next. And they were about to play their 13th game of the season. It was impossible not to feel mentally and physically exhausted, but more than that, they were also scared to death. "We've dedicated our lives to it, and they've already fucked it up once," said Jared, the memory of the loss to the Rebels as searing as it had ever been. And now he had to contend with an unsigned typed letter in his locker, as untraceable as a ransom note accusing him of being a loser in capital letters if the team didn't win the state championship. Several days later, starting linebackers Ivory Christian and Chad Payne found jerseys with the numbers of Irving Nimitz's starting running backs on them. Nimitz's backfield was the finest in the state. There were notes attached to the uniforms. The one to Payne said, "I'm going to wear your ass out." The one to Christian, who, because of his religious beliefs and his preaching, hated profanity, said, "You ain't shit, and I'm going to drive your dick in the dirt. Mojo my ass, and you ain't shit." The source of these notes wasn't discovered either. On Saturday, about an hour before game time, Coach Ballou met, as usual, with the defensive ends. He went over basic strategy, how to read the keys for the 6-sweep and the 10-tackle trap and the waggle at 8. What to do depending on how Nimitz lined up on offense. Okay. 29, cover 5 versus 1 back or no back. We're just staying straight, 29, unless you get a swap call, okay? Right? Get a swap call, and then you play a foot technique. Other than that, cover 5 means nothing to you. It means nothing. Cover 5 means nothing unless your linebacker gives you a swap call. And then, of course, that means you're in a foot technique on the tackle. Or, if you have a tight end, you're in a 7 technique. Okay? That's all that means. Bump to 8 flip, like always. Check loose to be over. Okay? Not strong set. Okay? There were no questions. Everyone understood perfectly because it was something everyone had practiced and studied religiously. Ballou then continued in a slightly different vein. Hell, guys, there's only 16 teams left, and hell, there's only going to be 8 teams remaining after tonight. You guys are in the elite few in the state of Texas. Hell, I'm proud of you. Real proud of you. Hell, play balls out. It's a great chance to show your stuff, okay? If we beat these guys and we play great defense, hell, everybody's going to know it, right? All the eyes are on us. All the eyes are going to be focused on you. All the sports writers, all the TV, all the fans, everybody. There ain't nobody else playing, okay? So you got a chance to really stand out, okay? One thing about it, I've been associated with state championship teams. In 84, we won a state championship, and in 85, we played for it. God dang, guys, there's nothing else like it. There's nothing else like it, and I still hear from those guys. One of them called me last night just to wish me good luck. It's still a real special feeling, and those guys are 21, 22 years old, 23. They're grown men now. It's still real important to them. And it still means a lot. I know it's been a long season, hitting and running and gassers and all that stuff. I know it's not any fun. Hell, it never has been and never will be any fun. But it's the reward that you get for paying the price, paying your dues, okay? That's why you do it. And that's why we want you to do it. And that's why we ask you to do it. And there's nothing else like it. There's no other feeling like it that you can feel from being on a championship team and playing with a group of guys like you've played with. It's something you always have. Later on in life, they can take your money away from you. They can take your house. They can take your car. They can't take this kind of stuff away from you. Something that you'll always have and you'll always be proud of. Let's play hard today. And let's knock the hell out of them. Roderick, okay? Let's light him up. Let's see how good he really is, okay? Let's put some helmets on him. Roderick Walker came into the game the state's leading rusher in Class 5A with 2,048 yards and 196 points. Coach after coach paid him the highest possible praise. They pulled out every possible time-worn cliché to describe him. He was unstoppable. He was as good a runner as they had ever gone against. He was poised to assume his place in the state record books with the stud-duck list of other great schoolboy runners. Billy Sims, Eric Dickerson, Earl Campbell, Kenneth Hall. After the team meetings, the atmosphere in the Permian locker room seemed more grim and determined than it ever had been. The players finished dressing with the methodical pride of a bride preparing for her wedding. Every piece of equipment adjusted and pulled until it was perfect. And as they slowly paced back and forth on the black carpet, they glanced at the new spate of quotations that had been tacked to the bulletin board. From Sam Huff. People pay money to see great hits. From Howie Long. They call me Caveman because of the way I attack people. I like to think of myself as being relentless. And from Chariots of Fire, let each of you discover where